League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
To the near post! Yeah! Messi to the net! Mamma mia! Lionel! Romelu Chiellini now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantarita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. And a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm for being our presenting sponsor. I'm going to be honest with you. Yesterday, watching the U.S.-Mexico, it was very difficult thinking of the tragedy in the Hill Country. And my mind has not changed today, so we will talk soccer. But it may be a little bit more difficult here today in the state of Texas and what occurred in the Hill Country. Guests on the show tonight, Brian Chiaretta. We're going to do some pros and cons on the U.S.-Mexico game. Federico De Michelis will join me. Dynamo had a stunning, exciting come-from-behind victory. In San Diego, 4-3, Ezequiel Ponce finally stepped up to be the DP he needs to be from the standpoint of winning matches. So we'll get into that tonight. But first, we're going to start with the Gold Cup final here in Houston. So from an optic standpoint, I'm going to start with this. 70,000 people, incredible. So congratulations to everybody involved with putting on the event out at Lone Star Sports and Entertainment, David Fletcher and company, and all those who went out and supported the great game of football. This is a taste of what's going to occur with the World Cup next summer with seven matches here in Houston, Texas in 2026. So big night out there from the standpoint of celebration, passion, and soccer. Now we're going to get into some nuts and bolts of this as well, because the context of this is Mexico went into this game as the favorite. I don't think there's any question about that. This was an interesting night. Because for me, and I set this up prior, there were players for the United States like Max Darfston, Eric Freeman, who were going to get blooded in this game, who have never played in a game of this stature. Patrick Adjiman up front. How would they handle the stress and duress of a U.S.-Mexico game in front of 70,000 people? Little different, I think. So we'll get into that. So here's a couple of the initial observations. I'm going to platform off this simple piece of data. 60-40 possession for Mexico. Too big of a gap. And it's too big of a gap when you have a team that has logged a lot of the minutes, right? Same starting lineup for Mauricio Pochettino. At some point, you're going to see legs get heavy, and we did see that in this game. 60-40. That number had to be a bit different. 55-45, you know, it had to be different. So the U.S. was outpossessed, made them work extremely hard. It forced Diego Luna, De La Torre back defensively. Luna spent much of the game defending. Now, I get the hype about him. I get the excitement. He's an exceptional player. He's got a piece of determination that we're all super attracted to. But we've already designated him a star, and the hype machine was out with Fox. And it got a little bit too much, I think. And I think we have to be careful anointing him a star because of this great performance in the Gold Cup. He's an MLS star for sure, but he's not a national team star yet. And I think sometimes because of the social media hits and the hype machine that does exist in sports now, it goes a little bit over the top. And to say maybe he didn't step up on the big occasion, I guess you can take that angle. But when you're defending for the majority of the game in the middle third of the field and your own defensive third, and you don't have an outlet in Adjiman, he couldn't hold the ball, and you don't have a vertical threat when you win it to go a little bit deeper and hit a few longer balls towards the corner flag, it's not going to be a game conducive to him. Now, you say, look, big players make special plays. Okay, I get that. That's a fair take. But the lack of verticality and a real threat behind a defense and the inability of Adjiman to hold the ball up was a real problem for the U.S. And the U.S. midfield was dominated and controlled. Gilberto Mora is only 16 years of age. He had a big part of it. Marcel Ruiz, Edson Alvarez, the Premier League man, who got the game winner, right? So the goals came in this way. 4 minutes in, you get a great goal from Chris Richards, tremendous delivery from Sebastian Berhalter, and you get the dream start. By the way, Chris Richards played a season down here with the Texans soccer club, youth soccer, after he came from Alabama. Eric Quill, who's the head coach of FC Dallas, brought him here. There's a little sideline I don't think a lot of people know. And then he was pushed to the Dallas Academy. 27th minute, Raul Jimenez ties the game. Now, this one's a bit of a problem for me, because if we talk about plays and moments in games and coaches love, well, we have to make the big plays. Well, this was a big play missed, and it was Tim Ream. And I have all respect for Tim Ream and the career he's had, but this was a missed tackle, and he went in very soft. He went in very gingerly, and I was surprised that the Fox panel had nothing to say about this. Landon Donovan called it a great goal. I called it a preventable goal. Should never have happened. Wasn't a great goal. It was a missed tackle. A man should have not even gotten the shot off Raul Jimenez. And if you notice, Tim Ream comes across his body because he's left-footed, and he's used to tackling with his left foot. Kind of with the outside of the foot, dangles his foot there. And it's weak. It's soft. And he should have come over with his right foot across his body and gotten a solid tackle in. So it was a missed tackle. Happens. It's costly. But don't tell me this was a great goal. Because if you're calling that a great goal and you're not calling out a defender who misses a tackle here, then you're not analyzing the game close enough. And I didn't hear that from anybody. And even Alexi, who's a center back, was there. Okay, enough of that. Anyway, just my take. Midfield control, Mexico had it, no question about it. The definition of a foul by the referee in this one was there really wasn't one. This was a game where you saw a lot of people clutching, grabbing, pushing, to the point where it got obnoxious. I'm sorry, it got a little bit obnoxious. A lot of silly fouls given away. And then, of course, the goal that was scored by Edson Alvarez, he was onside, it looked like to me for sure. And VAR checked it. But that goal, there was a push from Diego Luna prior on, I think, Alexis Vega out wide that led to the set piece. Now, that was something every single guy on the field did in this game, and for some reason it was called in that moment. This is the yin and yang of looking at specific plays and fouls. Well, somebody did that there. How can you call that? You know, it sounds like a youth soccer game. This referee let it go, and the bottom line is it was a little bit of a toss-up about how you were going to get fouls called. The game, he let it play. And this game should have had well over 30 fouls. It only, I think, had in the early 20s, maybe 21, 22, just to prove my point. But then that led to the game-winning goal. As I said, the Mexican midfield really had the best of the U.S. in this. Players like Max Arfston, Freeman, Patrick Adjiman got tremendous experience. So you can look at this game any way you want. You can say, oh, this was an abysmal performance. Or you can say, well, the U.S. gathered experience with some guys that aren't going to make a World Cup roster. They fought. They had a good tournament. Everybody on the outside looking in has to honor these guys, like Christian Pulisic and Anthony Robinson and everybody who's on the outside, Yunus Musa. You have to honor this. And it's good that those men had to look at this team, have a level of success. But this was going to be the biggest test always. Mexico was always going to be the favorite in this one with a more experienced roster. I don't think there's any question. It was a 13th Gold Cup final appearance for the U.S., and I think it was a 10th win for Mexico, if I'm getting that right. But to me, it all comes off the basis of dominant possession in this game. And the U.S. was pretty toothless in attack. Yes, they had a chance at the end with Adjiman. And yes, when you get limited chances, you got to produce one. But I think you gotta give this guy a little bit of breathing room. He's not the polished, finished product. Who is going to be the striker for the U.S.? Question still remains. But Mauricio Pochettino got to look at this group of guys. Malik Tillman stepped up in this tournament. Why did he step up in the tournament? Because he didn't have to defer to guys like Christian Pulisic and Yunus Musa. He stepped up in the tournament. Final? Nah, not so much. I heard on air he might have had a slight injury, whatever it is. But the striker position remains an issue. Will Follarin Balogun get his health back and prove to us he'll be the number one there? Will Ricardo Pepi get his health back? These are all questions. That was not answered in this Gold Cup. Matt Friesen goal. Good tournament. Max Darfston, much better going forward than defending. I thought he got through this game. Did cut in on his right and nearly had a decent effort. But I think, as we know, his best abilities are going forward. But he had Diego Luna back helping him defend the entire night. Freeman on the right side might have slightly kept on the game-winning goal of Edson Alvarez. But Alvarez, Jimenez is, these are Premier League players. Jimenez took a Premier League player for a walk a few times. He moved Chris Richards out of the middle quite a bit. Sebastian Berhalter, tough night, fights. Tyler Adams didn't seem to be the presence I think he normally is. It might be because it's a different group of players. But Chris Richards comes out to me in this tournament being the real shining star for the United States national team. I believe in this tournament he has progressed to being more of a leader, more of a personality. He was tremendous in the air. He rose above everybody from the aerial perspective. And you really have to give him, I think, a lot of credit. All right, let me give you a quick reminder here who's on the show. Brian Schiretta, we'll bounce it around. We'll get his thoughts on this game as well. Federico DeMichelis will come on. We'll talk about the Houston Dynamo win over San Diego, a 7-goal thriller out there. They come back late in that one to win it. Now, if Ponce doesn't produce the 2 goals, how are you feeling, Dynamo fan? I think it was exciting. I think there's a lot to talk about, and tonight I'll talk about how Lawrence Sonnali now is shaping a new image of the Dynamo, and it could be a more open Dynamo simply from an organic perspective, but it is going to get the Dynamo to pull off their game model a little bit. We'll talk about that tonight. Game model equivalent to style of play. So goalkeeper's an issue for the U.S. Center back position, who's going to pair with Chris Richards a year from now? Striker position as well, no doubt about it. If Diego Luna becomes a bigger part of this team, does Pulisic play central? That experiment wasn't potentially great. I thought it could be because I thought I could get Christian Pulisic more involved in the game. And you don't know where Pulisic sits with Mauricio Pochettino right now. But you have to believe Christian Pulisic's going to be a big part of the World Cup in 2026. Adjiman did not have a lot of touches in this game. U.S. got a little bit more pressure at the beginning of the game. Good start, got their goal. More pressure towards the end of the first half. The rest of it was all Mexico, and then they made a push at the end of the game. So those were decent things to hold your hat on. But Mexico, at the end of the day, clearly the better team. 75% of the fan base is Mexican. That still is a tough thing to stomach in the U.S. I mean, what national team plays in their own country to the point where, I mean, there's none other in the world, I believe, that really plays at home as the visitor. But that remains with Mexico because of the passion of the Mexican soccer fan in this country, and specifically Houston, Texas. But Houston, Texas looked great. Energy Stadium looked great with everybody out there, and I hope everybody had a good time. And by the way, those who won Gold Cup tickets on here, I would love to see you tag me on social media with some of the pictures from the game or some of your selfies and shots, because there was really a lot of color and pomp and circumstance in the stands, as always, and in the stadium. So thank you very much. If you send those on, you can hit me up with those at Twitter, at Glenn Davis, not Twitter, it's X, at Glenn Davis Sock, or at Soccer Matters GD. Yeah, send them on. Would love to see them. Or you can send them on at Facebook. There were some really, really cool costumes and pageantry at the game, and that'll be the same thing at the World Cup. Downtown, we'll have the fan zone, and all over Houston, there's going to be incredible little hot spots of game watching, World Cup watching. Not everybody's going to get into these games, and I hear you. Tickets are expensive. The World Cup is moving towards being a little bit more for the elite. I hear these stories of people selling cars to buy tickets to come to the Gold Cup or come to the Copa America or come to the World Cup. You know, if you're down to selling your car, I mean, that's your choice. I appreciate the passion, but I'm not sure if it's a good long-term move. But anyway, you do hear these stories. Alexis Vega, Alvarado, Jimenez, trio of good attackers. Mora, the 16-year-old kid. Again, don't anoint him a star yet, but when a 16-year-old produces good things on a field, everybody gets very hyped. You had Alvarez providing the balance. You had Montes and Vasquez strong. And then you had the handball from Sanchez. And again, this is, and I've heard this said by a lot of people, it's not the only time you're going to hear it here, is that these nebulous moments of a handball, that's confusing to people that don't understand soccer and are maybe trying to get in the soccer game. They say, how is that not a handball? I know the definition as well. He was just trying to balance and he went down to the ground. Boy, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. There's a lot of other ground where you could have put your hand. I don't know about that. And if in fact that's the definition of the rule, then you're creating a lot of nebulous room here for what is a handball. And of course, the offside rule is a very difficult one because it happens in real time and it happens really fast. And anybody who watched that game would have said, oh, he's offside. But when you watch the flick on, you will see that he's kept onside by Freeman. So it's where we are. And it's where we are on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Hope everybody out at Senate Avenue Brewing enjoyed the game. By the way, July 22nd, we will do a live show. Senate Avenue Brewing, Jersey Village. Get out there. Take 290. Take the Senate Avenue exit. It's right there. Andrew Mitchum and Company, the freshest in beer. Great, great food. All fresh. Beautiful patio. 7 monitors. It is a great wage place for watching soccer, but the nights we do our radio there, all like-minded individuals. So come on out. We have the t-shirts out there. We got great food. We got the freshest of beer. Their award-winning beer is brewed in-house. It's not mass-produced. Doesn't go out to the public. The only place you can drink it is right there. And you will have a great time. I would love to meet all of you out there. T-shirts, hats, soccer balls, all kinds of fun stuff to give away, including tickets. And Dynamo players have been showing up. We had Artur out there. We had Griffin Dorsey out there. We had Pat Onstad, the Dynamo general manager. So it's been a lot of fun. All right, let's take a break here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. More to come here tonight. Brian Sciarretta, Fernando De Michelis, all going to weigh in here tonight with their opinions of both the Gold Cup final between Mexico and the U.S. and the Dynamo thrilling, most exciting game of the year, by the way, 4-3 comeback win in San Diego. Let's take a break. LamontBrands.com takes you to break. Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats there. All your printing needs. If you're a youth soccer club, your printing needs, get them done at Lamont Brands and tell them Soccer Matters and Glenn Davis sent you. Let's take a break here.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We continue on here. A couple of things to remind you of, some great events coming up. July 21st, remember this, Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center. We're doing our Monday Night Football. We are airing the film from the 1966 World Cup, which includes England's only ever World Cup win. Jeff Hurst, Bobby Moore, the legendary names, they get the victory over West Germany. We're having a lot of fun at these events. It'll start at 6 o'clock Central Time. Again, it's Monday Night Football at Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10 Marquee Entertainment Center. Then the very next night, we go live with Soccer Matters in Jersey Village at Senate Avenue Brewing. We will have Dynamo players there, lots of guests on hand, a lot of like-minded individuals giving away Soccer Matters t-shirts and hats, tickets, and we will banter the game for 2 hours and drink some of the best craft beer on the planet. That's July 22nd at Senate Avenue Brewing in Jersey Village. With that, we bring on American Soccer Now's Brian Sciarretta. Brian, how are you? I know you were glued all over the place to the Gold Cup final. Just some initial impressions from you.
I thought the result was ultimately fair. Mexico was the better team. I thought Mexico played well. They played their best game of the tournament at the end. They were boosted by the home crowd, boosted by to have a chance to play the U.S. national team, because that didn't happen in Nations League. So credit to them. U.S. could have been better. We'll see what they learn from it. See what Pochettino learns from it moving forward. I just think ultimately the U.S. team struggled to win the ball back. You know, they let Mexico have too much of the possession. I think, you know, there's some talented guys on the field, but those guys need to be more two-way players, not just defensively, but they need to be better in the press, better winning the ball back, than better transitioning the ball into the attack. Sometimes that was done too slow. And, ultimately that paid a price.
Couldn't disagree with you more. I think that's where you got to start. 60-40 possession. It's too big of a gap. It's too much chasing. Couldn't get real good pressure on the ball. I thought Malik Tillman wasn't doing the defensive work in the first 45, in my opinion.
Yeah, nor was Luna. Sebastian Berhalter has his attributes. I think he's a good player on the ball, but that's a dual winning is not one of them. He has to get better at that. His free kick taking is excellent. His passing is, he's got some skill on the ball for sure. I can see why they like him, but you know, again, he also has to be better winning the ball back. And Adams wasn't up to, I don't think, as good as he normally could be, you know, throughout the balance of the tournament too. So, you know, that was really where I thought the U.S. team came up short in this game, and maybe, you know, in other games, even though they won, they could have been better. So, it's really winning the ball back and dual winning and loose ball and 50-50s, you know, and that's just really where I think they came up short.
Yeah, I think Mexico siphoned the life out of their legs. You could see how heavy leg the U.S. was. And this was a lineup that had been starting prior and logged a lot of minutes, a lot of opportunity for a lot of different players. I want to go back to Tyler Adams, though. You brought that up. He seemed off in this tournament. Is that because of the mix of players around him? But he didn't seem his normal presence, and it seemed a little strange to me. I don't know if he might have been carrying an injury. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he was look, I think he's absolutely necessary to the U.S. team. If they don't have him, like, the shape kind of falls apart, particularly, you know, noticeably. And you know, when I had big problems whenever they tried to start Cardozo in place of Adams, I think I said that last time I was on your show, it's the results can be drastic when Adams isn't out there, and depending on how they have to play without him. And that's a big priority. But yeah, he could be better. He needs to be like that glue that keeps everything together, and then that guy who can start when they do get the ball back from a defensive position to get it into the offense better. Like that's him. And yeah, I think that kind of struggled too. So, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around, and obviously starting the same lineup, you know, Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday, for three games, and then not really being very reluctant to make early subs, during any of it. You know, I think really, you know, Pochettino has to think about that as well moving forward, about how he uses his subs and keeps his legs fresh, because he really taxed the heck out of that team, that lineup particularly.
Well, that's been a problem in World Cups. We blow so much energy out in the group stages. By the time we get to the knockout stage, I mean, we wore the team out in the last World Cup under Greg Berhalter. I mean, the effort that had to go into the navigation of getting out of the group stages, I thought, wore the U.S. down in the last World
Cup. And he had some runners too, Glenn. Like he you know, Brendan Aaronson and Paxton Aaronson cover tremendous amounts of games. Cover tremendous amounts of distance when they play their games for their club. You know, they had some options out there, but why Pochettino didn't feel comfortable with his bench, you know, I think is another big story out of this, in addition to like that needing more two-way balance in the midfield.
All right, let's look at this from a different perspective. Alex Freeman, who you've been high on, Max Arfston, Patrick Adjiman. There's no question that these guys were given real opportunity in this Gold Cup by Mauricio Pochettino, and they played in the biggest game of their lives yesterday.
Yeah, I don't think the fullbacks, you know, fullbacks didn't really get forward effectively. I know Freeman had the chance. Defensively, you know, Arfston, I thought, got a little bit better towards the end of the tournament. That was a real problem earlier. He's got some skill on the ball, but again, you know, he's not a left back. You know, he's grew up as a winger, then he kind of converted to a left back only recently, last year and a half under Wilfried Nancy at the Crew. So that's a problem. And look, and Freeman, I think, is going places, but he's still so green. You know, this is only his first season as an MLS starter, and I think he left after 12 games in, you know, maybe a little bit more, but you know, so he's got a lot of growing to do, but I understand the upside with it, the physicality and his ability to be, you know, athletic and physical, you know, is very, very useful there, and gives him some options there that, you know, I think that the backup right back, Joe Scally, might have a tough time, you know, having those attributes and matching those skills once Freeman starts getting the required amount of professional experience as decided by Pochettino.
Well, he's got a year to do it. Sergiño Dest is the hopeful right back, as long as he comes back from his injury. Okay. But I guess I'm looking at it as a positive that these guys, Freeman, Arfston and Adjiman, got real minutes, got real experience. So let's look at it from the pro standpoint of experience gathered by this team. I think it renewed some interest from the American fan base. They get to the final. They didn't live up to it in the final. They were clearly the underdogs. But how about the positivity of, you know, the fact that people got real opportunity? I think some U.S. fans are going to really look past the fact that these guys are playing in front of 70,000 people against Mexico. They're not playing in Major League Soccer, and it's really their first experience tasting that kind of an environment.
Yeah, you know, look, you know, I'm bullish with MLS prospects. I think it's a good place for young players to get some minutes. You know, and you see some real prospects coming out of this league for U.S. and other countries too. But yeah, and there are some positives there, and some shortcomings too, like Arfston's defense, Berhalter's ball winning, but then Arfston can get forward and get a lot of assists, and Berhalter can take set pieces and pass well. So, yeah, you know, Adjiman, you know, a little bit more of a work in progress. I thought that they really were focused in on him last night because they try to, you know, they really understood. Mexico did their homework coming into that game. They knew how the U.S. was going to be playing through Luna, Tillman, and Adjiman, and really shut that down you know, and I think they found, but they ultimately, over the balance of the tournament, Luna's another player that maybe they didn't have, you know, comfort with coming in. Now they do. I thought with Tillman and Richards, it was an immense tournament for them because, you had two players who had really impressive club resumes, really impressive success at the club level. And it for years, actually, with both of them, it never seemed to really translate to the national team. This really showed signs that it was translating over to the national team. You're still waiting for that with Cardozo and others. But, you know, look, I think that, you know, there's enough players took, enough strides that, it was pretty, I'm not going to say it was a home run by any stretch of the imagination, but it was a double, I would say, in terms of, getting guys prepared for, the next year. And, ultimately, even if some of them don't make the World Cup team, I don't know which ones yet, it's going to be an experience for them moving forward into the next cycle. And it's going to do more to create a competitive player pool where players always have to be on their toes. Otherwise, they're going to get caught.
Well, one of the beauties of this, we're talking to Brian Schroeder, American Soccer Now, that Anthony Robinson, Yunus Musa, Christian Pulisic, Tim Weah, everybody who's on the outside looking in did see a U.S. team have some success in this. And there's a benefit to that, I think, as well, and an appreciation of these guys that went through this Gold Cup. Chris Richards, to me, was the clear MVP of this tournament, I think, with Malik Tillman and Luna coming second, maybe. Yeah. I think Richards' presence now and leadership came out in this tournament.
And look, they also have you got to give a shout out to Matt Fries. I think the goals last night were tough to stop. And ultimately, whether or not he gets overtaken again by Turner or not, like, I think he's really going to be on that World Cup team next year. The odds, I think, of him being one of the three goalkeepers next year after this summer is very, very high. So they got another member of the 26 that, you started to flush out the goalkeeping pecking order a little bit now in terms of dependable options and putting it in order. And now Turner knows he has to play and he has to make better decisions with his career, whatever that is. If it is Leon, if they get relegated, who knows yet? We're still waiting on that. And I think Freeze did well.
Yeah, and the other thing is that spending this much time around these players for Mauricio Pochettino, I mean, players had an opportunity to get into the good graces of a coach, be dependable to a coach, be a guy that this coach may think he can rely on. And I think that's why this Gold Cup was also very important. And I think you're right, Matt Fries. I mean, we do have to remember, right, that we got an entire club season ahead of the next World Cup. And this is where the shifting and the potential of, winning over a coach can become even a little bit more important because of your club performance.
Yeah, but I also think with this guy, with Pochettino, is like, I think a lot of stuff, rosters, decisions are made based on training that we don't see. In a camp, I get this, especially that he really pays attention to everything that goes on to him in camp. And to have an extended camp like this is important, and he kind of knows what makes players tick, who's a leader, who's not, who shows up, who trains hard, and I think Freeze got this because really, I think he trained well, people wondering why this option came his way. So yeah, look, I think some people took advantage of it, some didn't, and some were really now were in the mix and are kind of on maybe on the outside of the bubble. I don't know if Agyeman is, but when everyone's healthy or not, but guys, like I said, I think Berhalter, Fries and Freeman and Arston will be in the discussion, whether or not, even if they don't make the ultimate list, I think they helped themselves.
Yeah, I was surprised that, and I said this in the first segment, I was surprised that nobody, coaches and commentators, we all talk about plays, moments that can change a game. I thought Tim Ream went in so soft on Raul Jimenez. That was a totally preventable goal. Nobody really seemed to call it out, but that was a huge moment because...
Yeah, I thought he was thinking there was going to be... Yeah, I noticed Ream... was always looking for a rebound for Freeze because I think he was worried about it. And I think he didn't anticipate the pass into the box. I think he was thinking there was going to be a shot from just outside the box. And then when it was played into the box to Jimenez, it caught me a little bit, a split second by surprise. And that's really all Jimenez needed. But yeah, Yeah, I thought Reem.
Oh, but he was there. Surprise or not, he was there. He went with the wrong foot. The mechanics of defending, you don't come across your body with your left foot and dangle an outside of your left foot. That's that he's left-footed, so he likes tackling with his left foot. In reality, the tackle should come with his right foot, and it should come with some power and strength. And the shot never should have gotten off. You know, Landon Donovan's on the broadcast going, oh, it's a great goal. I mean, it's a great goal for Mexico, clearly preventable, and it's a mistake. It's a missed tackle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, Reem is a guy who, look.
I love this guy's career.
He's had a great career.
But and this, look, is, this is the moments in games win. That change games.
Yeah, look, Father Time is going to win with Tim Reem, but a guy like Reem shouldn't get beat on a play that's decided by experience and intelligence. Like, that's actually somewhat surprising. If he gets beat in a foot race, that's just life. But, like, you know, and when it comes down to reading a game, and after all he's seen in his career, like, that is surprising, especially against a former teammate of his, you know, a teammate as of recently.
Happens, but it was too bad because I thought that was clearly a preventable goal. Anybody else that maybe shined in this tournament to you outside of the ones we talked about, or maybe gives us a little glimmer of potentially making a roster for you?
Well, you know, we'll see with Damian Downs. I mean, he was one of the first offensive subs there. I mean, it's tough to read because we went through pretty much the whole starting 11, and that was pretty much the last three games, and subs played a minimal role. But it was good to see Damian Downs get in there. He's another player who's very inexperienced, but now he's cap tied to the program, and he can focus in straight with the U.S. After playing with Germany's youth teams as recently as last year. You know, good player. It looks like he's going to be transferring to the you know, Southampton in the top of the championship, and him and Ajimon might be in the same league. Within the month. So, you know, good baseline of comparison there too. And yeah, look, I think, you know, we really kind of went through everybody. You know, I think Luca De La Torre is a guy who I think it's still kind of go either way. In that 18, you know, I think it's the same shortcomings we saw this time were the same shortcomings he's had pretty much his whole career, even when he was in Europe. You know, good guy, crafty guy on the ball a little bit, but I don't know if he's really physically strong enough who you want, you know, in there in big games. I think that's been the story his whole career, and why he didn't stick around in England when he first was at Fulham.
Brian, great stuff. Thank you very much for coming on as usual. That's going to close out this segment here. Thank you for coming on, Brian.
Anytime.
All right, we'll take a break here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm, rolls on.
Even if we are white, just because we don't use any money and we drink no coffee cola.
Today we meet the girl who's going to take our virginities, and we're going to find that girl with this.
What is it?
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. And a big thank you to all of you who have tuned in here tonight. Reminder, you get the podcast of this show at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and right here at ESPN975.com. Lots of emotion, lots of thoughts coming in on the U.S.-Mexico Gold Cup match by many people, but the good news is 70,000 people were out there, and next summer we will have the World Cup here in Houston, which reminds me, tomorrow night you can catch Destination 2026, Houston's Road to the Cup. And tomorrow night, we'll re-air some of the good interviews with differing people that have been on the show. Okay, we continue on here tonight. Brought up the fact that Diego Luna had a bit of a tough tough match in this one as far as getting into the attack. It's been a good tournament for him. He's ID'd himself. But I did put out a tweet that said something about the fact that we are just elevating him too high. Let me read it to you. I put out, who has elevated Diego Luna to a star at this juncture with a question mark? We are enamored with a talented player with great potential and future, but the hype for social media and TV rise becomes unbearable. He spent much of the game defending for the most part because Mexico had 60% of the ball and the U.S. midfield was outplayed by the likes of Gilberto Mora and Marcelo Ruiz in company. Did anyone explain why he was less influential in this final? Then I put onward. And we love his grit and determination. Yeah, he broke his nose, continued to play, scored the two goals against Guatemala. We love watching him in Major League Soccer. We've seen him come into Shell Energy Stadium against the Dynamo and score goals. But, man, we just immediately go to the ultra hype of players and athletes in this country, and that's what we do because social media is about getting hits and likes and attention and, you know, you see people doing that. I do it too to try and get people on the show. I don't go over the top, though. I try to stay measured on some of this stuff, and it's probably not the way to gain more likes and followers and all, but I like to be authentic, and I like to give what I believe is my, you know, honest judgment, right? So we got some response here. We got a good one here from Eric Goodman, our good friend up in Austin, who writes for covering the Verde Report is what his column is. Eric Goodman says, get ready. Home World Cup, gargantuan event, billions of dollars on the line, all media, not just Fox, will be desperate for narratives, juice ratings, bring in the casual or non-fan. Find the story nobody else has. Every single player on the roster will be under a microscope, backgrounds combed through, storylines beaten to death, personalities inflated, hype through the roof. NBC does the same thing with our Olympians, but the difference, many of them are legit gold medal contenders. The U.S. men's national team will be billed as an all-star team in 2026, and when in reality, it's most likely going to be comparable to the quality of any roster of the last 20 years. That's a good take. I think it's a good take. Boy, NBC, they go so over the top that by the time you're done watching these specials, and I got every piece of respect for all professional athletes and or Olympians, having gone that as a professional soccer player myself in a very different time. But by the time you get done watching this stuff, you would think that no other humans on the planet have ever gone through hardship, disappointment. I really think you have to measure and balance that based on your audience. Like, your audience doesn't have heartache and disappointment and challenges and, you know, it's not a bad thing going to a soccer field every day to train. You know, I learned that when I retired. And let me tell you, I was not living in the age of luxury in the USL or the ASL back in the 80s. You know, there's youth players walking around with more gear these days than I ever had. And I have been a part of 7 World Cups, calling them for Fox and ESPN. And you do have to certainly be excited about it, but let's not lose the piece where we still have to give real opinion, that is healthy criticism, and not avoid things that maybe are pretty obvious. Like, I don't understand how we avoided the missed tackle by Tim Ream when we talk about the importance of singular plays in soccer games and how they're difference makers. How many times have you heard a coach, a pre-match, say, well, you know, it's all about us making plays, special plays. Well, Tim Ream needed to make a special play on Raul Jimenez, and he missed the tackle. Happens. But you have to call it out. You can't sit there like Landon Donovan and say it was a great goal. He was there. Should have made the tackle. Came in with the wrong foot. Mentioned that in the interview with Shredda. So I'm not going to go heavy in there anymore. Plays, moments. How is a foul called on Diego Luna by a referee that has not really defined a foul and has let a lot go. And then all of a sudden, he does the same thing that everybody else has done the entire night, concedes the free kick that leads to the game-winning goal from Edson Álvarez. Happens. But you got to call these things out, I think, in a bigger way. Diego Luna. Here's Jesus. He says, Luna just didn't show up. It's not just on him. Mexico held possession way more than that, it seemed. It was really a good team display from Mexico, not allowing U.S. men's team to play their game. Media definitely didn't help. Hyping him up, him versus Mexico. They screwed up. He used a different word. That's a good take. How do you defend? Yeah, you have the ball 60% of the time. That's how you defend. That's how you eliminate moments from players like Diego Luna. And he was back defending a lot for two-thirds of this game. And I do think Malik Tillman and De La Torre didn't do enough graft, didn't do enough work to support Adams and Berhalter in midfield. And the midfield was certainly lost by the U.S. Sports Junkie says Glenn is right on here, on point. Luna brings grit and hustle. There's something USA needs. Tillman, Luna, and Fries are not locks for the World Cup, but they are starters in my opinion, coming from a Mexico fan. Well, Matt Friess is in the picture, and he got this World Cup from Mauricio Pochettino, and he must have got it by what he did in training. So, you know, there is a lot to be learned here from the manager. Who knows how the pecking order looks now? You got to think the manager's not necessarily happy about people that are missing. I don't think he is going to deal with the shenanigans of Gio Reyna. And Reyna, if he wants to be a part of the World Cup, I think is going to have to jump in line pretty quick with an Argentine manager. And I think there's questions there with Weston McKennie. And then, you know, I don't think that Pochettino liked the fact that Christian Pulisic, whoever's right or wrong here, was not involved in this. So I think there's some dynamics behind the scenes that obviously we all don't know out here. Peter Ramirez, why was it not a handball? Since it did impact the play and the trajectory of the ball, seems like palming the ball should be a handball regardless if any player is around. I guess the statement was he was going to ground to balance and his hand landed on the ball. I don't know. You know, these are the things that are very nebulous in soccer, offside, something like that, that somebody who's a potential unique fan will see and be very confused about. But it happens. Rules are still very nebulous. VAR is nebulous. We all knew that was going to happen. That was never going to be used sporadically and in only moments of what we call clear and obvious. It's now been used all over the place, and it's too much, but we all knew what was going there. Crown Oak says, we got outplayed. Mexico toyed with us the entire game. We could not make three or more consecutive passes. We looked young and outmatched. And we were inexperienced and young. I think that's a good take. I also think that when you're so deep defensively and you really don't have a lot of vertical threat, Mexico handled the strength and power of Adjiman for the most part well. I don't think he's the most polished technically, but he's a handful physically. But Mexico beat him up from the opening whistle. So a referee wasn't really helping him the way the game was being called. So I think that's a good take from Crown Oaks. Robert Falvo says, everyone needs to read and understand this post-tweet. Thanks for sharing your opinion. Yeah, it's just an opinion. It's my opinion. It's my judgment. And that's why we like hearing from everybody else. Trying to build the conversation. It's a good thing. We're all strong enough personalities that we can handle a little bit. We can all take a joke. We can all take a little healthy criticism. What else we got here? Jafo, J-A-F-O, says, you saw the quality difference in the Mexico A team versus our young guys getting experience. People saying Luna is better than Pulisic don't know football. Yeah, that's what I mean by over the top. You got to be careful there. Pulisic put together a historic season for AC Milan. Whether you like him or not, whether you like the fact that he dissed the national team for the Gold Cup, he put together a season at Milan in a very tough Italian soccer environment where you do have to prove yourselves. He goes on to say, Jaffo says, the Stars got their summer break and hopeful we'll be 100% committed to the next summer when it matters most. Yeah, that's a good take. I like that take. I think sports fans and all of us are in the moment. You know, sports is now about the 30-second video clip. I don't think it's about overall bigger assessment now. That's probably more who grew up in the technology era. They like it quick. They want to get to the key plays. I'm not sure they really care about me talking about Tim Ream missing a tackle. They care about that much. But I do, because it's a key moment in the game, and it was a preventable goal. And then you can pick out and cherry pick what you want. But that, to me, was put a circle around it moment. I think the Adjiman chance in the box was a circle around it moment. The handball was a circle around it moment. The concession of a free kick from a referee was a moment. Not sure I like the I get how it can make the U.S. manager Mauricio Pochettino bitter. But at the end of the day, Mexico was a better team. I don't think there's any question about that. We're going to take a break here. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713. Call now. You need a personal injury attorney. It's John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. And boy, we don't like getting in accidents, that's for sure. But if you do, you need a personal injury attorney. You need the best. You need the one that is supporting your game. And like I say always, support all these sponsors of this show that are putting money behind the game that you love and bringing us soccer talk. Hugh O'Connor's Pub, Senate Avenue Brewing, Daspit Law Firm, Danish Inspirations Modern Contemporary Furniture, Cactus Music, Lamont Brands, Lone Star Sports and Entertainment. Get behind those that sponsor your show. And not only this show, but when you see, yeah, maybe you're going to go to Lowe's because you saw a Messi commercial. I don't know. Maybe you're not. You're definitely not if you're a French fan. All right, we'll take a break. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Soccer Matters.
Quick shot, score! The U.S. with Dempsey!
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate de gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe! Goal!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, we keep rolling on here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Hey, a word here for John and his firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They've been getting soccer on the airwaves for many, many years. I mean, in my opinion, they have had an impression on the overall sport in this community for backing this show up so that we can have soccer conversation and discussion. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. You know, like I say so many times on this show, you don't ever want to have to use a personal injury attorney, but there are times in life you do. And when you do, you want the best. The best is John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. If you get in a car accident, boat, motorcycle, maybe you're in the maritime industry, maybe you drive an 18-wheeler, maybe you're working construction, if you need a personal injury attorney, none better. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm supporting your game, the great game of football, soccer, right? Football, soccer. And it is the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. And by the way, hit us up on Twitter and Instagram, at Glenn Davis Soc, and at Soccer Matters GD. You can also do that on YouTube. But the follows, the likes, the responses, the challenges, what you want, we want to hear from you. And we want you to speak out, because part of the mission of this radio show is always to get more conversation in and around the game. So let's keep that going. All right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about here what's going to happen tomorrow. And what is happening tomorrow is the FIFA Club World Cup, the other semifinal. Excuse me. Real Madrid and PSG, MetLife Stadium. Of course, PSG came into this tournament winning the treble, the Champions League, French League One, the French Cup. Unbelievable team, collective. Very different than the days of the team being around, built around Neymar or Messi and Mbappe. And Luis Enrique has done an amazing job. He's got him to the semifinals. By the way, with little rest. I mean, these guys were in the Champions League final a couple weeks ago. It's crazy. So they won the Champions League, League One, and the French Cup. And they are the favorites, I would have to say. Now, they did have a lot of trouble with Bayern Munich. I don't know if you saw that game in the quarterfinals. But Bayern Munich's press was very effective. This was the most uncomfortable PSG's been in this tournament, and that I've seen them in at any time. The head coach of Bayern Munich, Vincent Kompany, had this to say. He said, "For me, such situations increase the motivation for the future. We won't go in the dressing room and say that the guys did not perform. The performance was exactly what we needed against this PSG team, but we couldn't manage to reward ourselves." That was Vincent Kompany. By the way, the other note there, that was the farewell for Thomas Müller of Bayern Munich, who has been rumored to maybe come to Major League Soccer. What a character and what a player. You know, sometimes his antics and just his fun-loving nature takes over for actually what he has achieved in this game. But it is pretty incredible. All right, let's get some thoughts on the Houston Dynamo. First of all, they took a full 3 points at San Diego. This is big. This is big. This was an up-and-down game, highly entertaining game due to mistakes. And there's a lot going on for the Houston Dynamo right now as they, you know, continue to try and put it together. They start with Jonathan Bond in goal, Escobar, Ortiz, Bartlow, Andrade, Dorsey on the bench in this one. Sebastian Kowalczyk not available due to immigration and green card status, getting that sorted out. He had to go back to Poland. Artur and Reigns in midfield, Denali, Bossy, Linger, and Ponce. So the first thing you see with Lawrence and Ali in this lineup, opponents have to think of the Dynamo very differently. And if they don't know about it in MLS, they do now. They know he is lightning quick. They know he is a vertical threat. You know that you might have to drop off a little bit deeper defensively with your line to compensate with that pace. And you're going to get unique goals like the Dynamo got through him in this game where it's just an errant clear and there's a moment of hesitation and he takes off and a defender's under duress. He knocks it forward with his head and finishes incredibly. Lawrence Anali is a game changer for the Dynamo. The only thing I would say is, for me, to my liking, he spent a little bit too much time having to defend in the other two-thirds of the field. That's a coach's problem. Ben Olsen's going to have to figure that out. But you are naturally going to get into more open games now because of the way Anali plays the game. You're not going to be in the slow, methodical build-up game as much as maybe you want now. Not if he's on the field. So that's going to happen. We're going to see how that works with the game model and with the insertion of this player. Who cares? If you win 4-3, that's great. But I want to see him take more risk. I thought he was brilliant in the beginning of the game. He set up Ponce beautifully. He was a real threat. And then he kind of faded because he had to defend a bit more. They score first through Milanowski. Anali scores, chasing that ball down. Then Escobar with a spectacular goal. He waltzed through two defenders and then kissed it off the post. So 2-1 at the half. Dynamo finished both halves in this game spectacularly. Remember, they finished the second half with two goals, one in the 87th minute and one in stoppage time, both by Ponce. So that's a DP performance. A DP has to win you games on his own sometimes, and he needs to do that 3 or 4 times a year in order to get payback on the price tag. I will also say that Ezequiel Ponce now, because of Anali's insertion in the lineup, may find more chances. This is something to keep an eye on, because opponents are going to have to get a second defender over to Anali. His verticality is going to, you know, his runs that he's going to make behind defenses is going to pull center backs off of Ponce. But again, the tempo and more transitional moments are going to occur now. So the game model, which may be pretty strict, it's going to have to loosen up, I think, because there is going to be a challenge to keep him higher up the field. You don't want him constantly back defending and protecting a left back. And I think risk and reward is something you really have to consider with Lawrence Anali, because, you know, you're going to want him in a higher position. You want him to be a threat. You want him to scare opponents. He could scare opponents. I don't think there's really any question there. Center back position for the Houston Dynamo remains a problem. They struggle there. And without Eric Svechenko being the one pillar that's consistent and dependable, it's problematic. This is a big circle around that position here going forward. It is unstable at times. It is a little bit worrisome. And I think, you know, all you have to do is watch the games to see this, and you'll know that this is an area that's got to get shaped up. Griffin Dorsey didn't get in the start in this one. I mean, there's real competition now with Andrade and Escobar. I don't know. Will we see him potentially moved higher up the field at some point? It's possible. It's possible if you want to get him, Escobar, and Andrade on the field at the same time. So I think there's a lot of really interesting stuff here. I don't think the Dynamo have that field leadership and conductor. Well, they certainly don't when it was Hector Herrera's team. I don't know who that is. I know Artur's the captain. Sometimes that's a bit of a overvalued thing, but I don't know who that one face is of this team. I would say at the end of the game, it was Ponce. Lawrence Anali is going to give you goals you could never get. He's the threat you never had. And that's like that goal that somebody whacks a ball blindly just to clear your lines. He's going to get on the end of it. And away he goes, right? And you got a goal. So that in itself is pretty spectacular to know that you now have this option, and opponents are aware of this and they're going to have to compensate for it. I thought the Dynamo, when they took the lead, they come out in the second half and again invite San Diego FC back in this game. Invited them back in the game. And they gave them life. They pushed the door open and they came through the door. And then they quickly get two goals. Valicari, Bobino. Bombino's goal was a volley. Anali was brought to the ground there. There could have been a foul called because he had a shot at getting out to block Bombino. But anyway, and then Ponce does his magic, 87th, earns a penalty kick, hits the penalty, 17 minutes of stoppage time. Ponce then one of the most bizarre goals you'll ever see. I mean, Bartlow walks the ball up. Basically, it's like a 15-yard pass, and nobody pressures him. Two guys stand around for San Diego, and the pass is just siphoned in behind the defense. And it's a great little quick, sharp run from Ponce. You got to give him a lot of credit. But this was the DP performance that we've been waiting for. Now, back to Lawrence Anali. He got, I think, 60 minutes somewhere. I think that was what he was going to get on this day. Everyone is going to try to deny Anali the ability to get turned. They're all going to try to get a second defender around him. And if he draws this much attention, it means you're going to have opportunity to circulate the ball and get it to the right places. And then when you get Jack McGlynn into this team, you've got your long-range threat on that side of the field. You got your set-piece taker, and you got your distributor now, who also I can see setting free Lawrence Anali. So with Anali and McGlynn on the field, your attack acquires two very vital pieces if you're building an attacking soccer team. A dribbler who's got breakdown capability that can break lines, and the individual player, and I'll probably say this again before the show's over tonight, the individual player is the greatest tactics buster out there. The individual can break lines. The minute you beat somebody, everything has to change and alter. So Lawrence Anali is going to give you that. He's also going to give you the ability to run behind defenses and be on the receiving end of delivery. And then McGlynn brought you a long-coveted piece of attacking soccer that you need, which is the threat from distance. And a few of them are going to hit the back of the net, but he's got to be honored. And if he's not honored, you're going to get punished. So once those two get back on the field, it's really going to be interesting to see what's going on. But the big fix will have to be at the center back position, I think. It's where the Dynamo seem to be in some real trouble back there right now, because it's a bit of a revolving door. There's mistakes being made. Consistency's not been able to be acquired there due to all the change of not only injury, but form. You name it. So there you go. So I think if you're looking at the Dynamo right now, you're looking at a team that, if some things start falling into place, you could whip off a couple victories. They are whipping off some victories in a row, because that's two in a row. But with Anali getting healthier, it just seems like there might be a little bit more coming now. And it could be exciting. By the way, that mistakes make games exciting. I've said this a million times on the air. There were mistakes in this game. There were seven goals scored. It was entertaining. It's so much more entertaining than just watching a ball slowly get passed around the field, which we do see in modern soccer from a lot of teams. And that's all a control thing. The trick is to be able to be more than that. Can you be more than that? And I think the Dynamo can now with Lawrence Anali. San Diego had more of the possession. It's a very collective-based team. Chucky Lozano came on in this game, tried to make a few things happen. It looked like he was gonna. Didn't come off. It was only the second loss at home for the expansion San Diego FC. So good work from the Houston Dynamo to get a 4-3 victory. All right, we're going to take a break here. We got much more to go on Soccer Matters. By the way, if you're interested in the ultimate driving machine, the BMW, get down to Advantage BMW in Midtown. Make sure you tell them Soccer Matters and Glenn Davis sent you. That's Advantage BMW in Midtown. We'll take a break. We have more to come.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. As always, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Quick word here for Senate Avenue Brewing. Senate Avenue Brewing, 290 Senate Avenue exit. All the beer, craft beer, all fresh. Produced in-house, not mass-produced. Award-winning beer up there with Andrew Mitchum and Company at Senate Avenue Brewing. As you know, we do a lot of live shows out there. And, of course, we have one coming up on the 22nd. So get out there to Senate Avenue Brewing in Jersey Village. We're having a great time. I notice that each and every event we do, we get bigger and bigger crowds. We will have Dynamo players out there, Dash players, tickets to give away, T-shirts, much, much more. Get out there with like-minded individuals. Senate Avenue Brewing, Jersey Village, Senate Avenue exit. Great fresh food. They got a patio there as well. Seven monitors all over the place for the best in soccer watching. So do not forget. LamontBrands.com. My friends Jerry and Mel Lamont for all your printing needs. They do our Soccer Matters T-shirts and hats. Get there. And another reminder, Hugh O'Connor's Pub, great soccer watching spot. I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center. We will do an event there on July 21st. It is Monday Night Football. And, of course, we've been airing films and World Cup finals. This one from 1966, the famous Jeff Hurst game. England winning their only World Cup final over West Germany in that one. Come on out for that. It'll start at 6 o'clock. But these have been really, really fun events as well. All right, let's go to our next guest, great correspondent of the show. He is Federico DeMichelis. He joins us now. Hi, Federico.
Hi, Glenn. It's good to be here again.
All right, ready for some wisdom from you. All right, initial thoughts on this. I would say this was a very good, entertaining 4-3 victory from the Dynamo, a game that had a lot of interest in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, I think it was probably one of the most entertaining games we've seen all season. We were lucky to be a part of it, and we were lucky to get the win as well. Unexpected, I would say.
If you look at this game and the way this kind of was not within the game model of Ben Olsen, who wants a little bit more of the methodical build-up, the press, yeah, the repress, this was a game, and Mikey Varis, the head coach of San Diego, also said that he didn't think his team really was collectively there. What made this game so open, and what made this game a game where we saw seven goals?
Well, I think one of the keys that we are seeing now in this new Dynamo, I would dare say, is that we have a player that we haven't been able to see this season so far, which is Lawrence Lightning Enali. And in him, there's a big responsibility now, because he is a game changer. He breaks games, and people don't know what to expect with the Dynamo anymore. This is a different Dynamo than what we've been seeing so far this season.
Yeah, the influence that he's going to have on other teams now is going to be very interesting. It's also going to be very interesting how Ben Olsen uses him, because let's just look at the goal he scored, right? At 1-0 down after Milan Alaski had scored in the 25th minute, 11 minutes later, Enali scores. It's just an errant clear from Amin Bassi. It's an awkward ball. They're committed forward. There's a defender looking up in the sky at this ball, and you see him. He's jet-fueled. I mean, there's people now measuring how fast he was running, I think 22.45 miles per hour. I think we should put him up against a thoroughbred horse. But anyway, he takes off, and this is a goal you don't see the Houston Dynamo score. They don't get goals like this because they don't have a player like this on the field. And, of course, his first touch with his head away from his body is spectacular, and then the finish is equally composed. But this is a unique goal in that we don't see the Dynamo get this type of goal, Federico.
Yeah, we don't. The speed was unreal. When you see it happening, too bad I wasn't there at the stadium, because already in the cameras, it's unreal to see him take off like that. But also, like you're saying, you know, the first touch to get the ball away from the defender is fantastic, and the finish is first class. You know, you really don't see that happening for the Dynamo very often. It's a player that we know won't last here very long playing like this. But, you know, when you think about Enali, you think about Jack McGlynn, you think about Ponce scoring again, things are starting to look different for the Dynamo. Things can be more optimistic from now on, I believe.
I would say you're saying that from the attacking standpoint, because at the end of the day, they still did concede three goals in this one. But I'm with you. If you have Enali as this option and this piece that the Dynamo haven't had, which is a vertical threat, and it's also a dribbler that can break down defenses, and I say this all the time, the greatest destructor of tactics is an individual soccer player. We know that. And then if you get McGlynn back, you have another element that you got with him, which is long-range finishing and also his ability off a set piece. So now you're adding elements of an attack that were not here, a dribbler, a vertical threat in a big, big way. A long range finisher, a long range finisher, and a set piece. Is it impresario? What is it?
Empresario.
Empresario. Yes, because you are one.
Yeah, but, There are things that there are all, we also need to think about that still need a lot of work. For example, Lingard's position in the team is still off. He just doesn't get the ball. When he does, he gets the ball in our field. And he's not that kind of player. He's not going to build an attack from there. We need to get him closer to the goal, but that is just not the way this team is playing, and that's not where he is being played right now. You also have Bassi that continues to be too predictable, too slow, in my opinion, even though he had a decent game against San Diego. Kovacic was not there. I haven't heard anything from the club. He wasn't in the injury report, and I don't think it was a yellow card issue either. So I have not heard from that. But, he is a player that also needs to be evaluated in terms of, what are we doing now with this team? And then the back line, which is, again, a big problem that we still haven't been able to solve, I think, with the injuries and, who to play and why. Even though, again, Bartlow had a fantastic match, even with an assist for the fourth goal.
So before we get into Ethan Bartlow, I think the real problem in the center back position is obviously the health of Eric Svechenko. If you have him stable and playing game in and game out or as much as possible, then your problem is not as big. Now you're basically trying to fill one hole. But yeah, it has been a revolving door back there. That's fair. The goalkeeping position was as well. But I want to go back to Lawrence Sonali. I felt that, in this system, he's expected to do a lot of defending, and he spent a lot of the game, and he disappeared a little bit from the game, to be fair. He spent a lot of the game in the middle third of the field and in his defensive third defending. And I'm just wondering, is Ben Olsen going to maybe have to pull off the game model a little bit more to get the best out of him and get him in the best areas where he can do the most damage?
I would hope so, but Olsen hasn't shown this season that he is the type of coach that is very willing to change his play style to accommodate for talent. We saw it with Lingard. He didn't. We see it with Ponce. This is the biggest acquisition the club has ever made for a player, and he hasn't. And now with Anali, the thing is that we're talking about a very talented player that can really change the course of a game. So I don't know. I don't see this happening. But at the same time, in a possession-based way of thinking games, when you have a player that in 2 seconds, as we say in Argentina, we call that on a tile, on a single tile of space can break a player like that and just take off or it's different. That's the kind of player that might save a coach like Olsen, who is maybe not so willing to change his play style, his play idea.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think it's going to happen organically. You can't take that out of this player. So it is going to lead, I think, to more open games, maybe like this San Diego game. I think you're going to see the Dynamo getting stretched out more. I think you're going to see them concede maybe a few more goals even. And they're going to be in vulnerable positions, but that's what comes with the risk of this player. You can get into a more transitional match, I think. Griffin Dorsey was on the bench, Escobar, Andrade. Andrade has brought real competition now. Griffin Dorsey in the future, I mean, would you put him back into the lineup for Andrade or Escobar right now?
It's hard. Escobar is such a problematic player for me because he is so aggressive. Sometimes he's just too much in his head. But at the same time, he has that passion, that way of doing things that is so contagious in the team. And then things like yesterday, out of the blue, that quality, that finish, that vision to just take that shot there is impressive. Andrade, he's been having a fantastic season so far as well. And Dorsey, we know what he brings as well. So it's a good problem to have. Just like I was thinking about Reigns as well, what a tremendous surprise it has been in the midfield. How stable, he plays like a veteran, and he's a kid. We forget how young he is.
Yeah, and he's really benefited from the Dynamo giving him a string of games. I think we all saw him blossom when he got three straight games in a row, basically playing a full 90 minutes, and it's just like he went from looking like a little kid out there to somebody who carries himself. Even his body language changed, in my opinion. Could you see Griffin Dorsey playing a little higher up the field in a linger role or being considered for somebody up on the right side of the field?
I would most definitely consider it, especially because Linger's position is still not clear. You know, I think what Linger is lacking is what Dorsey is very good at, which is finding that path on the right hand side. So I think it's very possible. I see it happening. Yeah.
Yeah. So if we look at data in this game, San Diego had 55% of the possession. In the post game press conference, their coach Mikey Varas, who was an assistant with the U.S., was very critical of his team. I didn't think he gave the Dynamo enough credit on this night for what they did and the challenges that they presented. I don't think they were prepared for Lawrence Sonnally. They may have been, but I don't think they knew enough about him. Frankly, I don't know how in this modern day you wouldn't know about him, but he was a bit of a surprise package, I think, for San Diego.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of when I saw Jack McClellan playing his game against, I think it was Turkey, one of the friendlies where he,
that's right.
Again, he receives the ball on the right, he cuts in, and he shoots and scores. You know, we've seen that happen with the Dynamo, you know, here in the MLS plenty of times. And I was thinking, well, someone didn't do their homework. You know, well, this was a similar situation. You know, if you don't know who Anali is and all of a sudden you're facing him, well, you're going to have trouble. Also, another player to talk about might be Holmes, you know, who I still don't see 100%, but he had some good interventions in the second half yesterday.
Came on for Lawrence Sonnally, also had that ball to Ezequiel Ponce that was scored, that was then called offside. So the Dynamo go down 1-0 in this one. They tie it up through an alley. They get a late goal in the first half. Escobar, I mean, it was a thing of beauty. Kissed off the inside of the post. That's the goal you alluded to, Federico. And then Bombino gets a volley at the back post. By the way, on that play, an alley was absolutely grabbed and thrown to the ground. And he might have had a chance to get out and block that, but nobody really even took a look at that. So, you know, you get the sense that the Dynamo take the foot off the pedal. They seem to always take the foot off the pedal at moments where you're going, come on, guys, regain a little bit of your aggressiveness now. Don't allow and don't slightly knock the door ajar to invite San Diego back in the game. And that's what they did.
They gave the ball away. They gave possession away, and they
gave territory away too, Federico. They
started
dropping off a little bit.
Absolutely, and I don't know. You know, this has happened multiple times. I don't know if that is part of the plan, and then you rely on a counterattack and a quick transition. You know, but why? Why? I mean, we've been watching soccer all our lives. We know what the consequences of that is. You know, especially you're playing away. You're playing against the best team in the league. You know, unnecessary. You know, when they brought in Chucky Lozano, I thought, well, this is, you know, they're going to finish this game very quickly now. And boy, was I wrong. But, you know, I don't see how it is necessary to give the ball away so much, you know, to just step back that much.
Yeah, well, the Dynamo made a real push. I'll tell you, much of the second half was San Diego, but they made a real push in the latter stages of the second half, and you know, they get rewarded. Now, this is what you would call a designated player performance, right? A player that wins you a game scoring two goals late, right? This is a DP performance that you want to see a little bit more often out of Ezequiel Ponce, don't you?
Yeah, I was thinking before he took that penalty, this was going to be a very important moment for Ponce in this club. Because people are getting a little bit tired, and rightfully so. You know, like we were saying, it's a very expensive transfer. You know, we're talking about $8 million. It's record for the club. And he just has not been delivering, partly because of, you know, it's his fault, sure. Partly because, you know, I believe at least that Olsen has not been playing to his talents. But then, you know, yesterday night happened, and I think that that changed everything. The way that he took that penalty and the way that he showed the path for Bartlow when he gave him the ball for the last goal of the day, of the night. I think it was really a career moment for Ponce, at least in the Dynamo, for sure.
Well, they get a valuable 3 points, and even if that was a point, there's a big difference for taking a full three out there against a top team like San Diego, despite the fact that they're an expansion team. Federico, thank you very much for joining us here to talk some Dynamo. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Glenn.
All right, Federico De Michelis there, and we appreciate all he brings to the show. We'll take a break here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, is presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713, call now. You get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, you're going to want the best. You'll need a personal injury attorney. There are moments we don't want to have in life, but they happen. You will need representation. You'll want the best. It is John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Also, Nico Nico's Greek and American Cafe, 3 locations in Houston. Get the souvlaki in, get the gyro in. Get the tailgating in with Nico Nico's Greek and American Cafe. Locations, Woodlands, I-10 in the Beltway, and then the original in Montrose. And, ooh, by the way, the chicken soup, the pastries, also off the charts. All right, that's Nico Nico's Greek and American Cafe. We'll take a break. More to come.
There's no sign of life, voices, another sound.
ESPN 97.5.
You need cooling, baby. I'm not fooling.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment of the night tonight here. Before we get into that, a quick word here for Cactus Music. All your best in vinyl and CD needs. Cactus Music, get down there. I'm sure there's not a lot of Black Sabbath albums in the pre-owned section because of that huge concert in Birmingham, England at Villa Park, Aston Villa, where Black Sabbath played their final concert. Ozzy Osbourne came out on a chair. I mean, that was an all-star studded lineup. I was going to go to that. I wish I did. I had it on my calendar. I should have went. Some of my friends were there. They were FaceTiming me during the show. It looked unbelievable. I mean, Ronnie Wood came out with Steven Tyler of Aerosmith, Ronnie Wood of the Stones. They did Train Keep a Rolling. All the metal guys were there. Guns N' Roses, Metallica, you name it. Cool. It was a pretty incredible affair. I was watching some of the videos and I was kind of wishing I was there. All right, the reason I'm re-airing this interview again, Lawrence and Ali, is because I think there's some tremendous messaging in here for young soccer players. Lawrence in this interview will talk about being told he's too small to play soccer and he's not going to make it at a club that he's at in Germany. He also talks about disappointment, motivation because of these things that are told to him. So I want to impart on young youth players that disappointment is a part of this, and it's how you respond to disappointment, okay? So anyway, it's good for people to hear it from Lawrence and Ali. So here's a re-air of the Lawrence and Ali interview. And by the way, he had a goal in that Dynamo victory over San Diego 4-3.
Thanks for coming back on. When you first got to Houston, we had you on the show, and it's really nice to have you back on. It's also very nice to see you back on the field, Lawrence. Just your thoughts on getting a nice 45 minutes under your belt after a long recovery from injury.
Yeah, it was nice to be back out there for more than 50, not 20 minutes. It was just amazing. This was what I was working for the last couple of months. It was amazing. Atmosphere was good. The game was nice.
Lawrence,
everything was perfect.
Take me into the recovery process. I've gone through that. It becomes a pretty lonely place And sometimes you don't really feel like a part of the team. Are those fair things to say about recovering from a knee injury?
Yeah, it was difficult, especially with my family being in Germany and me being alone here in Houston. It was even more difficult. But I have to say that being with the team, like I didn't feel like very separate from the team because I had my people in the team that helped me, that talked to me, they made sure that I'm good. Whatever I needed, they would bring it to me. Yeah.
Lawrence Adali joining us, Houston Dynamo. And I know they've been very much monitoring your minutes. That's what happens with the modern athlete now. Do you feel like you're getting closer and closer to, absorbing even more minutes?
Yeah, it was planned for me to get 60 minutes in total last week. So I played 15 minutes against Minnesota and 45 against St. Louis on Saturday. And now that I finally broke the 60-minute mark, I think I'm good to go. So we will see what the coach has planned with me.
So do you lobby sometimes with the medical staff saying, hey, I'm ready. I can do 75. I can do 80. You must be like a horse unbridled right now to get on the field.
Yeah, of course. But you got to be patient, especially in the beginning when you're coming back. It's always a little bit risky. I'm happy with the minutes I got now. I think it got better game to game. I feel more comfortable, and yeah, especially in Houston with the weather, it's a little bit more difficult after coming back after a big injury. Like I said, I'm very happy with the minutes I got, and looking forward for more.
Lawrence Anali joining us tonight, electric winger, exciting, somebody who your eyes get drawn to when they play the game. So you played a big part in the Ponce goal because you sized up a defender, you beat him to his left. One thing I've noticed about your game, Lawrence, you seem equally comfortable going left or right. Is that something that you trained just relentlessly, or is that something that's part natural, or maybe both?
I think it's quite natural. I grew up being a right back, so I always had to go down the line. The movement into the middle, they came a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was born comfortable going left or right. So, yeah.
Makes you dangerous because I think people that are predominantly right-footed playing on the left, I think defenders quickly realize that, right?
Yeah. It makes them get what I'm doing next, and I love that. That's what I want my opponents to think too much, and then I'm gone.
So that's
what I'm always looking for.
So when you got hurt, you wouldn't believe the amount of people asking me, when is Lawrence Anali coming back? I said, well, and then as we get closer to this season, they keep asking me when. So now you're coming back. It's obvious you've struck a nerve with the fans here in Houston. I believe a lot of that is because of the way you play the game, the want, the desire, the conviction to take people on off the dribble. You said you grew up playing as a right back. But this is an attitude too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my biggest skill, my pace and my 1v1s. I think that's what everyone is looking for, every fan. That's why we all love Messi, or I don't know who. Now, Lamine Jamal.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone likes watching these people, and that's my play style, and that's why I play football for. I want to beat people 1v1, 1v2, go and dribble, run fast. That's why I love football so much, because it's so diverse. You can do whatever you want with the ball.
And I think it's the perfect complement now to a team that is based on possession and passing the ball to all of a sudden put you into this team. I think opponents have to look at the Houston Dynamo very differently, not to mention the fact that you can make runs in behind a defense.
Yeah, that's you said it perfectly. I don't know what to say to that, but yeah, that's who I am. The teams can try to change something, but I think we'll always find a way to beat my man.
So for sure, I saw you come in that game, and St. Louis has to deal with the Dynamo very, very differently. We're talking to Lawrence Sonnally of the Houston Dynamo. I do want to take you back to something I asked you, I know, in the prior interview, Lawrence, and I want my listeners to hear it again from you, but just growing up in the amazing German soccer culture, just speak to that a little bit and just how the culture also, it's not just coaching, but it's the culture that grows the player.
Yeah, of course. That's, I think in Europe in general, there's a little bit more pressure when you start playing soccer on a professional or even in the academies on a higher level. It's always about results, and you can get relegated. So there's always more pressure from the fans, from the coaches, from the teams, whatever. So I think this pressure makes good players. Like if you get pro with that pressure, and I think when you make a pro with all these pressure, you can make it anywhere. Like it develops you as a human, makes you better in any aspect. Yeah, and then speaking about the fans, about the culture, yeah, it's just amazing. 80,000 people in the stadiums, loud noises, cheering for you. But also the negative side, if it doesn't work out good for like two or three games, the media is on you, the fans are on you. Yeah.
I called a U.S. men's national team game against Germany way back before the 2006 World Cup in Dortmund, and it was an incredible experience just to be amongst the German soccer culture.
Yeah.
I want to take you back to when you were young and the pressure thing that we were just mentioning. At what point as a teenager or a young kid do you begin to feel this pressure to make it, and where does that desire to become a pro footballer come from?
So it was when I was 14. I got told that I'm too small, that I'm too skinny, and I was playing for Hertha BC, Hertha Berlin.
Yes.
The club in Germany. So they told me it's not enough, and I made the decision to move to a smaller club in Berlin. And this was the point in my life, I think, where it clicked, where everything changed in my head, and I was like, you know what, I want to show them. I'm small, but let me get a little bit stronger, work on my strengths. And yeah, this was, I think I was 14 back then, and this was the point in my life that changed everything for me.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that's a moment of disappointment that you turn into a positive and motivation.
Yes. At the beginning, the first couple of months, I was down. I didn't even want. I was about to stop playing because it just threw me off. But yeah, losing a lot of friends on my team. I went to school together with them and everything. So it was a hard step back, but I made a couple steps forward from that.
And in Lawrence's youth career, he goes from Hertha Berlin, the disappointment, to Tennis Borussia Berlin. Then he goes to Victoria Berlin, Schalke 04, Hanover 96. You get into the second team at Hanover, and then you get 8 appearances for the first team before being loaned out to Rot-Weiss Essen. Tell me about those 8 games for the Hanover first team.
I remember the first game I came in. It was against Dresden. A big traditional club in Germany, amazing fans. I came in, I think it was, the stadium was sold out, 40,000 people. Everything was yellow. I said after the game I got a little bit of a headache because it was so loud and was so nervous. Probably the most nervous I've ever been in my whole life. But yeah, it was an amazing experience. I was 18 or 19 back then, I think. And
amazing.
Yeah, it was just nice. And then the next games, it were like short minutes.
Yep.
And also 2 games in the cup games against Leipzig and Gladbach were also amazing. well, yeah, in general, just a nice experience and very thankful that Hanover back then gave me the opportunity.
Now, not to get you in trouble here, but do you one day want to go back and play in the German Bundesliga? I mean, looking long term?
I'm open for everything. First of all, I want to stay healthy. And right now, I'm a player of Houston Dynamo. I'm very, very happy here. I think we can achieve a lot with this team, especially looking forward. Yeah, we have a lot more to come for Houston. And first priority right now is to make the playoffs.
All right, that does it tonight for Soccer Matters. Some really interesting stuff in there from Lawrence Anali of the Houston Dynamo. He's changing the complexion of this team. We'll see how it continues for the Dynamo. Great night here tonight on the show. Big thank you to all of you who tuned in. Remember, you get the podcast at Spotify, at Apple, and for our great producer, Brian McDonald, for our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. I'm Glenn Davis. Tomorrow, it's Destination 2026, Houston's Road to the Cup. And it's on tomorrow night at 6 o'clock Central Time. And that show will be presented by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Quanta, and Energy. So until tomorrow night, I'm Glenn Davis. Remember, soccer matters.
ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.